This is Prop Points on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome to Prop Points. I'm Jeff Erickson. He's Nick Whalen. I'm in California. He's at the D in Vegas right now. We'll spend some time at Circa. Just doing the whole Vegas NFL draft weekend thing here. Loving that. We're going to do tons of first round draft reactions. We'll preview day two today from a betting previews perspective. We're going to break down the playoffs. Zach Cohen's going to jump on with us in the progressive guest line there. We're really looking forward to talking to Zach about both last night. Yep. And about tonight's slate as well. And then finally, we'll break down today's betting slate for baseball. One day game that starts off in about 15 minutes. Going to be Cubs and the Phillies. Taijuan Walker versus Colin Ray in that one there. Seiya Suzuki back in the lineup for the Cubs. So, yay, get him in your lineups for fantasy purposes if you have weekend lineups or daily moves on that one there. Nick, let's jump right into it. The NFL, you know, day one of the NFL draft is in the books.
Yep.
They shocked the world at two, the Cleveland Browns, trading down with your Jacksonville Jaguars. I mean, I think that's got to be the lead story for me is, hey, Travis Hunter, a Jaguar.
Travis Hunter's a Jaguar, man. I did not know what the Jaguars were going to do going into last night, right? There was some Travis Hunter smoke that really picked up in the hours leading up to the draft. We had these vague reports that Jacksonville wants to do something big. And you had a feeling if they were going to trade up within the top five, right, going up from five to two, it wasn't going to be for a quarterback, obviously. I didn't think it was going to be for, you know, an offensive tackle. You don't take a receiver there. You don't take Ashton Jeanty at two. So I think once we knew that the wheels were in motion for that deal, it was pretty obvious who the Jacksonville Jaguars target was. In terms of what they gave up, Jeff, like, is it exciting as a Jaguars fan to have one of the coolest players in college football history? You know, maybe the most dynamic athlete in a long time in college football on your roster? Yes, it's very cool. But to give up that future first round pick, it's tough, man. It's tough. It puts a lot of pressure, I think, on the organization, a lot of pressure on Travis Hunter. This now has to work out. Like, he has to be elite on at least one side of the ball, if not both, to justify the acquisition cost. And I think if you are taking him at number two, if you're trading up specifically to do that, the Jaguars are going to explore using Travis Hunter on both sides of the ball. There's no question about that. For sure. I think if you're investing that amount of capital in him, you have to maximize this on both sides. So I think if you're James Gladstone, if you're the Jacksonville Jaguars, the way you're looking at this, the sell to your franchise, to your owner, why we're giving up additional capital is we think we have a guy who could be our number two receiver and could be our number one or number two corner. So that has to be the case, I think, in order to justify this, but certainly exciting. Really exciting to see if this does work out. I have a long history with this franchise, Jeff, and I think you've probably gone through this with the Bengals. I think Raiders fans, Giants fans, Titans fans go through this where it's like, I like it on paper, I like the idea, but do we trust this franchise to actually maximize the player? When it comes to the Jags, I'm not sure I do.
Yeah, I understand. And we're going to talk about that with the Bengals here in a second, too, about the same sort of principle, as a matter of fact. I thought it was instructive that they introduced him as a wide receiver slash cornerback, not a cornerback slash wide receiver.
Yep.
And let's face it. I mean, the spot's open. He could step right in and line up opposite.
100%.
He could be in there right away. Now, is he going to be 110 snap player? Probably not.
I don't think so.
Maybe.
Yeah, I don't think so. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know how realistic that is. I think initially he won't be. You know, I think you have to test the waters. You have to see durability-wise, stamina-wise, is this something that can really, really work at the NFL level? I mean, obviously it worked in college. And, you know, Travis Hunter, I think where he is as an athlete relative to his competition in college football, I think will be a little bit different than the NFL. You know, that's where I'm a little bit skeptical. And again, maybe this is just me as a sad sack Jacksonville Jaguars fan who's been through this so many times over the years, just taking the pessimistic route. But again, he has to be elite on both sides in order to justify this. And I think they're going to let him try. Like you said, this is a team that has plenty of needs. I would argue that cornerback was maybe their biggest need coming into the draft. So even if he's giving you, if he's playing 60 to 70% of the snaps at corner, he's playing 60 to 70% of the snaps at receiver, I think that's still fine. Again, as long as he's giving you starting caliber, borderline elite caliber production on at least one side of the ball.
Absolutely. How did Cleveland do with all this here? Not just in the draft price, but then turning around and drafting Mason Graham at five.
Yeah, it's probably a little bit of a letdown, I suppose, if you are a Browns fan. You know, I think value-wise, they did well, right? You picked up an extra first-rounder in 2026, and clearly this is a team that is building for the future, has been for a long time. You know, they've made their attempts to go all in. Every time they've done that, it has completely backfired on them. But, you know, it's not a team that has high expectations in 2025. And I think if you're the Browns, picking up as much, you know, big-time draft capital as you can makes a lot of sense. I mean, do you really trust the Jacksonville Jaguars to be a top 10 team, to be a playoff team next year? I mean, that could end up being the 7th overall pick. You know, I think this could really work out for the Cleveland Browns. And you get a really good player at 5 in Mason Graham. The Browns obviously hold the 33rd pick. They have the 36th pick now as a part of that Jacksonville Jaguars trade. So even though they didn't make a splash, you know, if you're a Browns fan, it's like, man, we could have had Travis Hunter at 2. That's a lot of fun. But I think they made the responsible decision to pick up that draft capital. You can still get your quarterback. If you like Shedeur Sanders, you're going to have a shot at him at 33. You know, there's going to be teams that could potentially want to trade into that pick. So maybe you trade back again and pick up more capital. So I think we've seen the Browns, you know, maybe try to be a little bit over-aggressive in the past, try to make the splashy pick, you know, try to make the pick that saves the franchise. I think they did the right thing last night.
All right. Let's talk New York Giants. You know, Abdul Carter.
Yep.
Everyone knew that was coming. I don't really have much to add there. I like him. I think that was the logical pick. And we'll see what it means for Thibodeau. You know, whether they're going to, you know, whether they're going to make that trade.
Yeah.
But let's talk about, but let's talk about the trade, the Jackson Dart trade,
for
what it's worth. I see in the notes that you think that they didn't give up a whole lot there for him. I don't like the trade. I don't like it. I think it's kind of, because I don't like Dart as much as you do, I think.
Yeah.
I think that's part of it there. I don't think Dart's ready to contribute this year. And it's a lame duck regime, head coach and GM. And they're going to inherit this quarterback, whoever is the new coach, whoever is the new GM, and they may not like him. I don't know if they needed to do this. I know they probably did. The Rams, if they liked Dart that much, the Rams were probably going to take him at 26. That was instructive. Yep. The Rams traded right away out of that pick after that.
Yep.
But I don't know. I mean, they have 3 quarterbacks. They don't have 1. Winston, I mean, how bad does it feel to be Jameis Winston right now? I mean, he signs first and then they add 2 people on top of him.
Yeah, RIP to, you know, Jameis Winston to Malik Nabers season in fantasy. That lasted like 4 days, and now Jameis Winston is, what, the third quarterback on that depth chart? I mean, I think if you're evaluating this trade, if you're evaluating the pick, it totally depends on your evaluation of Jackson Dart, you know. And look, if you're not a Dart guy, that's totally fair. And I'm not a huge Jackson Dart guy. I was just more of a Jackson Dart will go in the first round guy from a betting perspective. Like, if I'm a Giants fan, I'm not super fired up about this. You know, we've talked about in the past on this show, you know, there's a pretty low hit rate as far as quarterbacks who go in this range, you know, especially guys who are not necessarily projected to be top picks. You know, like the guy, you think Lamar Jackson, you think of Aaron Rodgers, you know, guys who slid in the first round. You know, they were a different type of prospects, I think, than Jackson Dart. You know, Dart going inside the top 10 would have felt wrong. Like, this feels like a more appropriate draft slot for him. But in terms of what the Giants gave up, I thought it was fine. You know, you trade 34-99 and you gave up a 2026 third. You compare that to what the Atlanta Falcons gave up to move back into the first round to take a second edge rusher. And look, I get it. You know, the Falcons have had pass rushing issues for years. I mean, they had like single digit sacks until late in the season this past year. But you compare that to what the Giants gave up specifically to get a quarterback, where usually there's a bit of a tax. You know, if a team knows, hey, you're trading up for a specific quarterback, we're going to make you, you know, we're going to milk as many assets out of you as possible. I think when you compare it to what the Falcons gave up, it's fine. But again, do you really feel like, all right, we got our guy, you know, our franchise starter for the next 10 years? Like, does Jackson Dart even open the season as the starter? I think what you're alluding to is now this potential controversy of, okay, he's not ready, but the regime needs him to be ready because they need to prove that they made the right pick.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And I think if you're going to trade in back in the first round, you're going to give up that draft capital. Get it on a player that can help you this year.
Yeah.
I don't know if that player existed at 25 for them.
Yeah.
But I'm sure there are many players, many positions that they could have gone with there. And I just think it's kind of interesting. They said that Russell Wilson's going to start. Dart's going to be starting, what, game 5, game 6?
We see it every year. We see it every year, right? Where it's like, oh no, we're going to bring him along slowly. And then you start 1-4 and Russell Wilson looks terrible and the fan base starts getting on you and the pressure builds. Yeah, I would be shocked if he doesn't start at least a handful of games as a rookie.
All right, we're going to talk Shedeur Sanders next. But first, are you still using your buddy's gut instinct as your betting strategy? Come on, you deserve better. RotoWire has the real tools the pros use. Rankings, projections, updates, and data that doesn't sleep. Whether you're making picks, setting your fantasy lineup, or placing bets, our award-winning insights give you the edge you need. Get started today by heading over to rotowire.com and entering ROTO15 at checkout for 15% off any RotoWire product. Shedeur Sanders fell out of the first round. the way he was being covered, like even at the start of the draft, Nick, I thought, I don't know. I wasn't into it. I mean, anyone who's been paying attention to the betting odds, paying attention to the talk, they knew that he wasn't going to be going in the top five. It wasn't like he fell. This is where, you know, 21, sure, with the Steelers. Okay, the fact that the Steelers didn't take him, maybe that's a little bit of a surprise, but I didn't think that was going to happen either.
No.
I don't think this is a massive story.
Well, I think it is because, you know, you sometimes forget when you're so in the weeds, you know, from a football evaluation standpoint that, like, Shedeur Sanders is a national celebrity, right? You know, I think there is, I think he extends well beyond his on-field production. And, you know, he's one of the biggest names in this draft, even if it became increasingly clear that I think the majority of teams were either put off by Sanders or were just out on him based on what they saw on tape. I do think this is going to end up working out okay for Shedeur Sanders. You know, obviously, it's somewhat of an embarrassment for him, especially, you know, considering everything that his dad has done and kind of the way he conducts himself. I think he's certainly expected to go in round one. But again, there are plenty of teams that I think are going to be chomping at the bit to strike early in round two. I mean, the Browns, like we said, they could take him at 33. They have two picks in the first four. You know, we could see the Raiders, you know, still be in play. I think, you know, the Rams clearly were sniffing around the quarterback market. You know, maybe they'd be more interested in Shedeur Sanders in round two. So I think this could work out well, particularly for Cleveland. You know, you pick up the additional capital, you get your defensive tackle, and you could still get your quarterback. You know, a guy who nobody would have been shocked if the Browns traded back into round one to grab last night.
Yeah, Browns minus 190, the clear favorite to be the one that drafts Shedeur Sanders there. Maybe we'll touch on that a little bit more later on here in the show. But, you know, if the Browns don't go after him, he could fall more than people think. More NFL draft talk when we come back here on Prop Points.
You're watching Prop Points on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Let's continue our draft coverage here on Prop Points. Jeff Erickson, Nick Whalen from RotoWire. Let's talk a little bit about some of our best bets, some of the surprise picks. Nick, I was so close on some of these. So frustrating. I went through one for four on my best bets. I hate it. I'm so annoyed at myself there for that. But some of them were close. Like I said, Tyler Warren at number 10. I thought that I really thought Loveland would be gone, and I knew that Genty would be gone. I got that part right. I knew it was tight end at 10. I just got the wrong tight end. Oh, that would have been so epic. But instead it wasn't. But Travion Henderson not going the first, that cost me two of my four picks. So, you know, that was kind of a killer there. When Denver passed on a running back at 20, I knew I was kind of in trouble.
Yep.
The Chargers kind of gave me that false hope. They took Hampton at 22. I'm like, okay, still a couple teams that could take a running back there. But no, as soon as the Commanders did not go running back at 29, I knew the day was done.
Well, I was with you on that one, man. And, you know, no shame, by the way, in going 1-3 here. You know, a lot of these are plus money. You're taking some shots in the draft markets. But, yeah, I think you said it right. You know, when the Denver Broncos ended up taking Jedi Barron, you know, the corner at 20, you're on alert at that point. And then, you know, the Chargers take Hampton. But I still thought, you know, there were more opportunities. Like you said, Washington, I wouldn't have been shocked, you know, if Buffalo took a running back, maybe signaling that they would be willing to potentially move James Cook. And I thought the Chiefs, you know, who ended up swapping picks with the Eagles but stayed in the first round at 32, that was the one, you know, watching the very end of the draft. You know, I'm crossing my fingers. Like I had the 18-1 long shot in on Quinshon Judkins to be a first round pick. Obviously that didn't come through either, but I'm surprised. And I want to ask you, by the way, about that Chargers pick, because obviously the LA Chargers acquired Najee Harris this offseason. And if you've been doing any offseason fantasy, any best balls, you know, there's been reasonable excitement around Najee Harris. I'm surprised they went that direction. I thought that would potentially be a receiver spot. Obviously, they pass on Matthew Golden. He goes the next pick to Green Bay.
Yeah, clearly they must have saw something in Golden they didn't like, or maybe they just thought Hampton was too good of a value to pass up. Harris has been, I wouldn't say a plotter, but he hasn't exactly been a dynamic back either.
Yeah,
I can really see this being a timeshare in year one. And, you know, maybe even at the start of the season where Harris is the starter and by the end of the year, Hampton's crushing people.
Yeah.
Kind of like Nick Chubb's evolution. Remember, Nick Chubb took a long time to get full usage as a rookie. And I feel like Hampton could go that route. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. The Chargers want to run the ball. You know they do.
Yep.
You know Harbaugh really just thirsts for running the ball. So there's probably enough carries to go around. We may have to be a little patient. Those first couple of weeks might be frustrating. you know, even watch your, you know, in fantasy purposes, watch the waiver wire early on, see if someone gets frustrated when Hampton doesn't get carries early on. But man, I want some Hampton. I want him in best ball for sure. Oh, yeah. I think that's where I think that could be, because I think it'll be, there'll be the Najee game, there'll be the Hampton game. I think that's the way it's going to probably play out.
I'm a lot more interested in Hampton, especially in best ball when you're, you know, you're shooting for upside, right? Like I think Najee Harris is going to be involved. I think it will be a two-back system, no question about that. But I think there's significantly more upside with Hampton, right? And even though the Chargers went out of their way to go acquire Najee Harris, you're invested a first-round pick in a running back. You know, I think that is that's a signal in and of itself that we really value this guy. You know, we view him as more of the home run hitter. I think it's fair, by the way, to call Najee Harris a plotter. I don't know, maybe it's the Steelers uniform. Like, running backs always look slower in Pittsburgh. You know, maybe maybe getting the powder blues on in LA will help him out. But Amarian Hampton, certainly a different type of back, and I think somebody who has that big play potential, and that was missing for the most part last year with the Chargers, right? As much as we love J.K. Dobbins, you know, I think the writing's on the wall as far as the injuries just kind of wrecking his career. He's not the same player that he once was. You know, I was part of Kamani Vidal hive last year. That never really came to fruition. He's basically just totally out of the mix at this point. But no, I thought it was interesting. I thought it was interesting to pass on Matthew Golden. What did you think about the Packers going receiver? We were talking about that a little bit during break. I will say, there's a lot of pageantry going on with all these picks. You know, I'm sitting there, you know, streaming it on the golf course, and it's like, all right, this guy's talking for 3 minutes before he announces the pick. I did think the way Mark Murphy introduced that pick, saying, for the first time since 2002, the Packers are taking a first-round wide receiver. I thought that was a cool moment.
Yeah, it was. The crowd went wild. They liked it. It speaks to the wide receiver room that currently is there in Green Bay and how they're unhappy with that. So, I get it from that perspective too.
Yeah.
You thought that they might take a corner.
I did.
And that was one of your bets there. And what does that mean for Jaire Alexander? Does that mean they're not going to trade him? Because I don't like the cornerback room without Alexander, without an adequate replacement for him.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, for the second year in a row, the Packers basically had their pick of, you know, 2, 3, 4 corners that they reasonably could have taken at 23. Obviously, they passed on all the corners last year as well to take Jordan Morgan. I still think Jaire's gone. I think if you read the local reporting, especially, you know, they've been heavy on this for a long time, that relationship between Jaire and the coaching staff and specifically Matt LaFleur is essentially irreparable. But they need him. If you look at the depth chart right now, it's arguably the worst cornerback room in the NFC. And, you know, they made a few kind of minor additions through free agency. Like, right now you're depending a lot on Keyshawn Nixon, who is more of a kick returner than he is a cornerback. You know, Eric Stokes is now with the Las Vegas Raiders. And I think you got to be prepared if and when they do trade Jaire Alexander, that it's going to be an underwhelming return, right? This is not going to be a Jalen Ramsey. You know, you're getting a first round pick and you're getting a second and a third. I mean, I think it could be a fourth, a fifth, a sixth. Like, you know, he's missed exactly half of his games that he could have potentially played in over the last 4 years. You know, it's a big contract. You're already looking ahead at what that next contract might look like. So I think they trade him, but I don't think they're going to end up getting a ton of value. As far as how Matthew Golden fits in Green Bay, it's hard not to like the pick, you know, especially considering Green Bay hasn't done this in almost 25 years. I do wonder, like, upside-wise, you know, can Matthew Golden be a future number one? Is it more of a Xavier Worthy, you know, he's kind of this bit guy. He keeps the defense honest in a lot of ways because I think Green Bay is looking toward the future with this pick, right? Not only are you not expecting Christian Watson to play for most, if not all, of the 2025 season, but you got a decision to make on Christian Watson's contract. You got a decision to make on Romeo Doubs. So I think this is kind of a more of a forward-thinking move for Green Bay as they plan out that receiver room for 2026 and beyond.
Absolutely. I want to give you a little bit of love for Colson Loveland, plus 280. Congratulations on that. 22-1 as Offensive Rookie of the Year right now. If we have time, we'll delve into those markets a little bit. We teased this earlier. Shedeur Sanders. Who will draft Shedeur Sanders next? Via DraftKings, latest odds, get the Browns at minus 190. They have two bites of the apple early in the second round. The Raiders, do they actually like him? They're second at plus 175. The Saints at plus 600. Will they pass on him twice? You know, maybe they just gauged the market and said, you know what? I think we can get him in the second. Or maybe they like, maybe they don't like him. Maybe they like the kid from Louisville a little bit more. Maybe they like Jalen Milroe a little bit more. I think it's interesting. Yeah. Where do you think Shedeur Sanders goes? Does he go to the Browns?
I think that's most likely just because the Browns have two shots at it, just because they have the first shot at it with the 33rd pick. You know, I think it makes sense that they are minus 190. the Saints might have to move up if they really want Shedeur Sanders. But, you know, what makes this interesting, like you said, is who knows? Some of these teams might prefer Jalen Milroe. Some of these teams might be taking a long look at someone like Tyler Shuck out of Louisville. So, I think that the Browns are kind of the incumbent for a reason. I could see the Raiders doing it. I mean, if you're the Raiders, you're looking to make a splash. You say, all right, we came out of the first two rounds with Ashton Jeanty and Shedeur Sanders. I mean, that's certainly a sell to your fan base. I don't know if that would necessarily be a Pete Carroll type of selection. But if I had to bet it right now, I would just default to the Browns.
All right. Let's do another quarterback, Jalen Milroe. A lot of options here. Obviously, if the Browns pass on Sanders, maybe they're interested in Milroe because they don't have a quarterback of the future. I'm sorry. I don't mean to besmirch the good name of Kenny Pickett, but they don't have a quarterback for the future. So Browns, you know, Steelers, Saints, Raiders, Jets, Rams. You like any of those?
Yeah, I mean, again, it's kind of the same debate that we're having about Shedeur. And, you know, I think the Steelers to me are probably the most interesting landing spot as far as, you know, instant impact. Obviously, they don't have a quarterback right now. I still think, you know, there's a decent chance that Aaron Rodgers lands there. But that is the franchise that I think I would trust most to develop him.
Yeah, I think now that the Rams have picked 46, that's intriguing to me. That seems like they don't have a long-term solution.
And Milroe
is a slow-cook prospect.
Yep.
And, you know, they have the luxury of time to develop an extra second-rounder. I think that could be very interesting there for them. Unlock your winning edge with an unbeatable offer. Get full VSiN Pro access to everything we do from now through August 1st for just $59. Sign up now and save 50% off the regular monthly price with a daily email recapping all the best bets from VSiN hosts and guests. Exclusive betting splits from DraftKings and Circus Sportsbooks, complete with trends and analysis to sharpen your game. 24/7 video on the VSiN Watch app, plus full VSiN.com access featuring advanced analytics and pro betting systems. Every sport, every edge, one low price. Don't wait. Get full access through August 1st for just $59 at VSiN.com/subscribe. That's VSIN.com/subscribe. All right, we got about 30 seconds left here. Mm-hmm. Let's tackle one more real quick here. Cam Scataboo. A lot of people, I think, is a polarizing prospect.
Yeah.
Does he go in round two? Who takes him?
I don't think he goes in round two. I think the clock starts for him in round three, potentially round four. You know, it's interesting that books are offering Cam Scataboo markets, which just kind of speaks more to his national profile as opposed to maybe the prospect that he is. You know, Patriots 6-1, Chiefs 7-1, Niners 8-1. I think all those landing spots would make sense. I mean, Broncos at 9-1, obviously a team that I think is still interested in acquiring a running back in this draft. That would be a team I would monitor.
All right, we're going to shift gears, talk a little hoops coming up next. Zach Cohen joining us on the Progressive Guest Line. This is Problem.
You're watching Prop Points on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome back into Prop Points here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Nick Whalen, Jeff Erickson hanging out with you. Gave you our NFL Draft Day 1 recap. Talk a little bit more draft as the show moves along. But NBA playoffs still ongoing at 3 big games last night. 3 more coming our way tonight. We got VSiN writer and betting analyst, you know him, Zach Cohen. You can find all of his work over at VSiN.com. He's got daily plays up every day. You can find him on Twitter at BettingOnX. Zach Cohen joins us on the Progressive Guest Line. And Zach, before we get to your plays for tonight, some spots that you're looking at over the weekend, I want to talk a little bit about what we saw last night. The Knicks, they hung on. Well, it was, yet again, not a convincing win necessarily for the New York Knicks, who led by double digits for much of the second half, end up winning only by 2. They take a 2-1 series lead. Knicks now minus 550 to win the series. Do you see Detroit finding a way to bounce back in game 4? I'm on the record, Zach, as under 5.5 games in this series. It has not been as convincing as I hoped it would be so far, but how have you evaluated this one and anything that you're looking at as we turn our attention to game 4?
I'm with you. I like the under 5.5. I didn't end up taking it. I was a little bit scared because honestly, I haven't been that high on New York throughout the course of the season, but I do like this matchup for them just because I think that the Pistons are lacking, you know, in shot creation outside of Cade Cunningham. I think, you know, they've gotten some really good games out of guys like Tim Hardaway Jr., you know, Tobias Harris, Malik Beasley, but these are not guys that are going out creating their own offense. And I think that when things really bog down and slow down, they need somebody that can really help him as another outlet. I just don't think that they have that. Whereas the Knicks have, obviously, Karl Anthony Towns, Mikal Bridges, OG Anunoby. These guys all can create in a pinch. And I think that's why you're seeing, you know, so many big runs from the Knicks, which has kind of been the story of the series. This could be a 3-0 series if, you know, not for some really big wins for the Knicks. So I do think this is going to end in five games. And obviously this has been a really good run for Detroit. I think this has been a great season for them, but I like New York to finish the job.
Yeah, I was impressed that they shared the ball a lot better early in that game. You know, they got Karl Anthony Towns established. Anunoby got established early in that one there. I think they had a combined 35 at half. Was it really just that simple offensively, or is there any other adjustments that you see the Knicks making there?
I think it was that simple. I think that everybody was kind of clamoring after game two to get Towns more involved. You heard Jalen Brunson in the Thursday morning shoot around saying, I need to be off the ball a little bit more. And we saw it really worked well for them, getting Towns some early touches. Anunoby played really well too. Obviously, Brunson still did his thing in the fourth quarter when they needed him. But, you know, empowering everybody else makes his job easier. So I just think they need to continue to spread it around early in game four, and they should be fine.
Let's talk a little Thunder Grizzlies. A shockingly fun game three last night, Zach, between these two teams. Obviously, OKC, a big favorite on the road. They go down 29. They trailed by 26 at the half. They complete the biggest halftime comeback ever in NBA history. It just feels like only the Thunder will be able to pull this off. And you started to get the feeling, you know, as they trim that lead down to 15, then it's 10, then it's 8. It just kind of felt inevitable, especially with no Ja Morant in the second half. Now, Jeff and I on the show yesterday, we were talking about this game, and I think I said, you know, this is the opportunity for Memphis. Like, if you have any hope of turning this into a series, you know, winning back any level of respectability, you have to take game three. I don't see this going well in game four, especially if Morant isn't out there. Anything that you're looking at in this series or in game four at large?
I completely agree with you. I think that there's very little hope for Memphis, and it kills me because I took the Grizzlies plus 3.5 games, minus 180 before it started. I thought that was home last night. Once Morant was out, it was really ugly, which is why you need to pay attention to the injury report heading into game four, because if he's not out there, I'd be looking at the Thunder to cover. I'd be looking at Thunder to cover some alternates. I don't think that they can score without Morant. Honestly, they've been having trouble scoring with Morant. They just played a very good, you know, first couple quarters in that game. So I just think that the Thunder are going to beat down on him. Game four, they've got to be, you know, somewhat defeated both physically and mentally.
Speaking of beatdowns, what happened with the Nuggets last night? The Clippers, I know the Clippers are playing their best ball, but wow, 117-83. Clippers are now minus 360 to win the series. Do you see a ray of hope here for the Nuggets? What's going to happen here?
I don't think that there's much hope, but that's mostly because I really like the Clippers a lot heading into the series. I just think when you break things down from March 1st on, there were three teams with an efficiency differential of plus 12 or better at cleaning the glass. That was the Thunder, the Celtics, and the Clippers. Like, they have played like an elite team for the last 2 months, and I think that they are the better team in this series. And obviously, you know, they've been letting Russell Westbrook shoot a lot of open threes. That did not work in games one and two. He was surprisingly hitting them in game one. He hit the one that ended up winning them that game. He did not shoot well in game three. They're going to continue to do that, and I don't think he's going to hit shots on the road. So I think that this Los Angeles team is probably going to roll from here. Maybe Denver gets the one at home, but I do think the Clippers win this in six at the most.
More from our friend Zach Cohen in a moment. But first, the NBA playoffs are here, and so is the VSiN Killer Sports NBA Playoff Challenge. We've invited 15 sharp minds from the world of VSiN and Killer Sports to go head-to-head, making 38 picks apiece from the start of the playoffs all the way through the NBA Finals. That's a total of 570 NBA playoff picks, all available to VSiN Pro subscribers. Picks are locked in 1 hour before the first game each day, so you'll have fresh insights to guide your bets every step of the postseason. Right now, you can get full VSiN Pro access through August 1st for just $59. Don't miss this playoff edge. Head to VSiN.com/subscribe to sign up today. Again, that is VSiN.com/subscribe. VSiN.com writer Zach Cohen joining us on the Progressive Guest Line. Zach, let's take a look at what we have on the Friday night slate. We'll start with Celtics Magic, and you'll notice that number down to just 3.5 now in favor of the Boston Celtics. Jason Tatum, we expect him to miss a second straight game. Jaylen Brown, Drew Holiday also added to the injury report. Is this a spot where you could see Orlando stealing a game given those injuries?
I think so. Honestly, I took the Magic plus 5.5 in the contest because those lines do lock, and I thought that that was a really good number for, you know, a Boston team that is missing a lot of guys and has a lot of players questionable. I think that Orlando has shown that you can kind of hang around in this series. Obviously, you know, Derek White's three-point flurries definitely kill them a little bit, but I don't think we're going to see as many of those in Orlando as we did in Boston. So I think the Magic have a shot tonight. Also, I put on the website not something that I would say is a traditional play, but I have a play of the Magic plus 10.5 parlayed with the Pacers plus 12.5 at minus 111, which is something I've been kind of flirting with all season long, just going across every book, seeing as many points as I can get in games that I have leans on, but not necessarily plays. This is a night where I think Orlando can use a few extra points, but I do think that they will end up competing in this game.
Speaking of my Pacers, Knicks, Bucks, let's talk about that game. The series moves on to Milwaukee. Both teams, total home team, home comforts of home type of teams there. Both 20 and 20 on the road. Does Milwaukee get well in this game? And what do you like in this game?
I ended up staying away just because this is a spot where it seems like the odds makers believe they're going to bounce back. Like, you're seeing a bigger spread on this game than it makes sense from a number standpoint. Just obviously, given what we've seen through games one and two, the Pacers have been the much better team. I don't see why they're getting 5.5, but I ended up staying away just out of, you know, sheer fear of what the number is. But I did take Andrew Nembhard over 10.5 points at minus 114. Also played an alternate for him to score 15 plus. I just love the way he plays in the playoffs. I think he's the definition of a playoff riser. He scored 17 points in each of the first two games in this series. I don't think that the Bucks really have anybody that can defend him. I don't think they really have anybody that can defend on the perimeter at all. So I think this is a really good matchup for him just to consistently get feet in the paint. He can knock down threes, even though he did not do it during the regular season. I think he continues to play well in this series. Honestly, you look back to last year, he averaged at least 12 points per game in all three of the series that the Pacers played. It just feels like a really low number.
Unfortunately, I agree with everything you just said. Andrew Nembhard has absolutely roasted the Milwaukee Bucks over these last couple of years. Went over that number in 5 of 6 games in that first round series a year ago. And like you said, I don't know who you turn to. You know, Doc Rivers is talking about making lineup adjustments. That's all well and good, but I don't know what the option is. They don't have a perimeter defender unless you're going to dust off Andre Jackson, you know, who hasn't played in weeks. All right, Zach, we'll finish out with the late game tonight. Lakers-Timberwolves, game three. We've seen two very different results so far in this series. I think it's made it a little bit difficult to evaluate, you know, especially the Lakers' effort defensively. Obviously, night and day from game one to game two. You could say the same thing about the shooting for the Timberwolves. I know you're looking at Minnesota here on the money line at home.
Yeah, I don't like playing the money line when I don't have to, but I just don't trust this Timberwolves team to cover 3.5 or whatever. I mean, it is 3 now. That's a better number, but I do think that they play with their food a little bit too much, so I just wanted to grab the money line. I feel a little bit better about that. I'll just say that with this series, I really think Minnesota is the better basketball team. I think even when you look at some of the numbers with Luka, Reeves, and LeBron on the court together, they have an efficiency differential of plus 1.3. Since December, the Timberwolves are plus 6.6. This has just been a really good team since the slow start to the season. And I think that a lot was made early on about the way the Lakers are going to be able to go to small ball lineups and kind of disrupt the Timberwolves. I don't really think that's working out the way that they think, because I think Minnesota is completely fine with Randall and Reed playing the five, bringing DiVincenzo in for Conley, and just kind of trusting that they have, you know, the tougher perimeter defenders, the better three-point shooters. I just like the way that they play. I think they're a little bit more connected. Obviously, J.J. Redick's a good coach. This is a talented team. Luka Doncic could steal road games on his own. It's always scary, but I do think that if you play the Timberwolves, they are the better team in the end. I think they're going to win.
I think the team that wins tonight, Zach, might end up taking this series. Lakers in 7, by the way, the favorite outcome at DraftKings. That is plus 270. Awesome stuff from our guy, Zach Cohen. You can find all of his work, all of his picks over at VSiN.com. Check him out on Twitter at BettingOnX. We're going to head to break. We'll switch over to Major League Baseball when we come back. Jeff Erickson's best bets for the Friday baseball slate coming up next here on Prop Points.
You're watching Prop Points on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Welcome back into Prop Points here on VSiN, the sports betting network. Nick Whalen, Jeff Erickson, hanging out with you till the top of the hour. Make it rain with Adam Schein coming up next. Jeff, we have a full baseball slate coming our way tonight. There are things happening outside of the NFL draft and the NBA playoffs. I would like to say that we have a game in action. We kind of do. We're in a rain delay right now, early in that Phillies-Cubs game. Not even sure that game ever really began, Jeff. We're still in the top of the first. Right. So in a delay with rain moving through Chicago, that is the only game that should be in action right now. It's a night-heavy slate. Let's take a look at some of the games that you want to bet, Jeff. I know you got a whole slew of best bets to unload for us. We'll start with a fun pitching matchup, Pirates and the Dodgers. Dodgers, big favorites on the money line, minus 218. If you're interested in the Pirates, that's plus 180. Low total here at 7. Paul Skeens going up against Yoshi Yamamoto.
Yeah, that's why it's such a huge matchup, such a fun matchup there. Why? That's why I threw in the Pirates price, too, because it's a really good price. You get Paul Skeens at plus 180. I mean, yes, it's the Dodgers. The problem is, they're running. And it's not just this, the Dodgers. It's also going up against Yoshi Yamamoto. Yamamoto. Man, I need to dig more into Cy Young props, K props with him. Mm-hmm. You know, it's tough for like overall K props, like for the season, just because, you know, they go once a week, but it's suiting him so well. You know, 0.93 ERA, 0.86 whip, 10 Ks in his last start, or ludicrous 35.2 K percentage.
Yep.
You know, Skeens has been pretty good. You know, he's striking out less, but he's also walking less. So it's almost like he's purposely pitching to more contact just so he can go deeper into games. I'm wondering if that's a thing or not, but he hasn't been as dominant from a K percentage standpoint. Still, 25.4% is very good. It's well above average. Yep. But also, the Pittsburgh lineup, it's just really awful. 78 WRC plus, 83 versus right-handed pitchers. I'm going to go I don't think there's a whole lot of value in betting the Dodgers on the money line, so I'm going to go with the under 7 runs at minus 118, and Yamamoto to record a win plus 145, maybe tie the two together, maybe dig into some of the strikeout props for Yamamoto while you're at it.
Well, you mentioned looking into those Cy Young futures. I mean, these are the two short shots to win the NL Cy Young right now at DraftKings. Paul Skeens plus 260, Yamamoto plus 350. Your guy Hunter Green hanging around at 5-1. Let's move over to the Rangers and the Giants, Jeff. This one close on the money line. Giants minus 115, Texas minus 105. A little bit of a higher total here, but still relatively low at 7.5. Nathan Eovaldi going up against Justin Verlander. Some injury news, by the way, for the Texas Rangers, which is not good news for the Nick Whalen NFBC team. Corey Seager landing on the IL this week.
Yeah, hamstring injury for him. And I think they are doing it, putting him on the IL pretty quickly as an abundance of caution. You know, with Seager, you can't mess around. Unfortunately, he's good for an IL trip every year. That's why he goes in the fourth round in fantasy drafts instead of the second, just where his price, where his skills would put him otherwise there. Yeah. Interesting notes here, especially with Seager out, the Rangers are already below average against right-handed pitching, 89 WRC plus. That's like 25th in baseball against right-handed pitchers. But I love the pitching matchup in favor of the Rangers. Verlander has had one really good start. It was his last start, a quality start last time against the Angels. But, man, 5.47 ERA, 1.50 whip. I think he just picked on the Angels last time. I'm not fully in on Justin Verlander right now. That he's at home probably augurs in his favor a little bit, the fact that Seager's not there. But, man, Nathan Eovaldi has been shoving this year. 26.3 K percentage, that's way up. Swing strike rate is way up, too, at 14.8%. That supports the ERA, that supports with his, you know, 0.75 whip. Sure, whatever. That's not going to continue. But he's a good pitcher. He's the better pitcher in this matchup. I think the better price is on Texas on the money line at minus 105.
Rays on the road at the San Diego Padres. Jeff, another game with a low total sitting at 7. San Diego minus 148 on the money line. Tampa Bay plus 124. Talked a lot about the injuries for the Padres, but they just keep rolling, Jeff, especially at home. 12-1. Straight up at home this season. Shane Baz going up against Michael King. In terms of the pitching matchup here, is it tough to stay away from San Diego at home? Are you going to the total? What do you like?
Yeah, this is tricky because San Diego is just losing players left and right. Then their roster is decimated by injury there. The latest being Luis Arraez, but you know, no Cronenworth. That's a bad one there for them to lose as well. It's tough. On the same hand, though, they're 12-1 at home. It's really kind of tricky. I like both pitchers here.
Yep.
Shane Baz, 322, 107. It's his first road start. It's interesting that Rays have had front-loaded the schedule with so many home games to begin the year. This is just their second road trip, their third series on the road, and Baz hasn't pitched on the road yet. Michael King, man, he's been so good. 27.2% K percentage. I'm impressed. that King, a guy that was a reliever for much of his career, you know, he was a full-time starter for the first for a full season last year, half a season in 2023. He's maintained that K percentage at 27.2%. I'm just going to go the under here. I'm going to go the under 7 runs, minus 110 is the number. Good pitching park, two good pitchers. I think that's the route I'm going to take on this one.
Really interesting matchup in the NL tonight, Jeff. Braves, Diamondbacks. So we got Atlanta as a slight favorite, minus 130 on the money line. Arizona plus 110. Higher total here at 8.5. But again, another pitching matchup that I think is really difficult to evaluate. Chris Sale and Zach Gallen. I mean, what is going on with Chris Sale? Like, the ERA is almost triple what did he finish last season. The strikeout rate's still great, but hasn't gone deeper than 5 innings into any game. Like, he's dodged the true, you know, what the heck was that, blow-up start. But overall, this has not looked like 2024 Chris Sale at all.
Shockingly bad numbers for Chris Sale. 617 ERA, 163 whip. He's striking people out. 29.1% K percentage. It's down, but for his standards. It's still among the best, very best right in baseball. Whopping, huge, 422 BABIP. That's batting average and balls in play against. You know, every time they make contact, it's falling in for a hit, it feels like. The problem is he's giving up loads of hard contact, especially on his fastball. His fastball over at Baseball Savant, one of the things they do is they measure like the run value per pitch. And his fastball run value is in the first percentile. That's very bad. That's dark, dark, dark blue, according to it. Blue is bad when it comes to the Savant metrics there. Max exit velo is in the bottom first percentile of all pitchers in Major League Baseball, 116.7. He's getting up tons of hard hits. Hard hit percentage is up. Barrels are up. Average exit velocity is up. So that kind of suggests that BABIP is real. That, you know, there's a reason why he's giving up all these. He's not getting like giving up bleeders that are falling in. He's giving up lots of rockets. Zach Gallen, on the other hand, he had that amazing start against the Yankees. Everyone probably had him benched. 13 strikeouts in that one there at Yankee Stadium. Since then, he's been very meh. He's been giving up a lot of walks. I'll probably bet the trend here, take the over on 8.5 runs. Minus 105 price, pretty decent price. Don't really have a strong opinion on the money line on the side, just because I don't trust either starting pitcher right now. If we get into the bullpens, I think the Diamondbacks are a little shorthanded right now. I think that the Braves are slightly better, but their bullpen's not been great either. So I'll just take the over and run scored.
All right, let's fit in one more quick before we hand out our G-Bank best bets of the night, Jeff. Marlins, Mariners, Cal Quantrill going up against Logan Gilbert. I know this is another one where you have a play on the total, sitting at 7.5.
Yeah, I really like Logan Gilbert here, but, you know, the money line at minus 285, it's just, yeah. I don't think there's a whole lot of value there. Maybe you can go find the pitching win line, maybe bet on his strikeouts. You know, the Marlins have been better than expected at the plate so far this year, but Logan Gilbert is just such a house cat. He loves, loves, loves being at home. You look at his splits from the last couple of years, 238 at home, ERA and 0.66 whip at home, 386 on the road. Last year, 249, 394. Huge split there as far as that goes. So I'm going to just say that he's going to have another good start there. We'll kind of go that route, go the under at 7.5 runs. You know, even the Seattle lineup, they lead baseball in road WRC+. They're among the bottom 10 teams in home WRC+.
Man, Logan Gilbert, a house cat. I love that term. I'm absolutely going to be stealing that for my NBA analysis. All right, let's get to our G-Bank best bets of the night. They're brought to you by G-Bank, the official bank of VSIN. G-Bank is up in the ante with up to a $750 bonus for new G-Bank Visa Signature Card customers. First, new customers who spend $1,000 on eligible purchases within 90 days from opening their account get a $250 bonus. And if you spend $50,000 on gaming and sports app loads within 30 days, you'll receive another $500 bonus. So add that together, $750 in potential bonuses coming your way via GBank. You can apply now over at VSIN.com/GBank. That's VSIN.com/GBank. Subject to credit approval, terms and conditions apply. Jeff, you just gave us some great plays in Major League Baseball, but I know you're going to tail Zach Cohen on an NBA prop for your best bet.
Yeah, we got an expert like Zach Cohen. I'm just going to try him. Andrew Nebhard. I'm going to go with the alt line of over 11.5 points at plus 100. The original line of 10.5 is now minus 130 a pay. So I'll take the plus price, go one more higher. I'll just brave it there.
All right. I like it. I like it. Pass it off the liability. If it loses, it's like, hey, Zach Cohen gave us that play. It wasn't my best bet.
Yeah.
But I'm with you, man. As we talked about, Andrew Nebhard continues to kill the Milwaukee Bucks. I'm going to go with the Pacers to win this series in five games. I'm jumping on this now. I think there's a decent chance Milwaukee could win at home tonight. Maybe they take game four, but I think they split in Milwaukee. I think the Pacers finish it out in five, plus 240 right now at the DK Sportsbook. And give me Anthony Edwards over 26.5 points. We still haven't had the true Anthony Edwards game in this series. He's at 22, 25 points, taking 44 shots. The aggressiveness has been there. I think that comes around tonight. Anthony Edwards over 26.5 points. That's going to wrap it for us here on Prop Points. Make sure you stay tuned. Make it rain with Adam Schein coming up next.